Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunnigy. This week's guest is Oklahoma Republican Congressman Frank Lucas, who joins us to talk about the future of agriculture under a Trump administration and what lies ahead for the Farm Bill. But first, here are this week's headlines. Donald Trump is back in the White House following his inauguration earlier this week. Trump began his presidency by issuing a series of executive orders. They include directives to crack down on illegal immigration and to roll back energy and environmental regulations issued by the Biden administration. President Trump is also threatening to impose new tariffs on major U.S. trading partners as soon as February 1st. Those countries, Canada, Mexico, and China, are the three largest markets for U.S. ag exports. Leaders of Canada and Mexico reiterated they're ready to respond quickly and forcefully. Also on the trade front, Trump repeated his threats to take over the Panama Canal. He says American ships are, quote, being severely overcharged and not treated fairly, and that China is operating the canal, not Panama. The canal is operated by the Panama Canal Authority, which is owned by the Panamanian government. There is a Hong Kong-based company that runs ports at either side of the canal's entrances, but there's a neutrality treaty ensuring no country's ships receive special access or treatment using the canal. Trump also said he plans to declare a national energy emergency, which would allow for more energy production in the U.S. The president wants to increase domestic production of oil and natural gas to fight inflation and bring down the cost of living. Trump wants to repeal what he calls the Biden administration's electric vehicle mandate. One of Biden's incentives was to have half of all the vehicles sold in the country by 2030 be electric. Congressman Frank Lucas is a member of the House Ag Committee. We asked him if farmers should be concerned over President Trump's threat of tariffs starting another trade war.
There's always that danger. But remember, President Trump in his first administration used tariffs to get the attention of the Chinese and our trading competitors around the world. And he got their attention in such a way the Chinese at the time agreed to buy $50 billion extra dollars in U.S. ag goods. So it's a tool that has to be used, I think, in order to get the world's attention. Now, how high will those tariffs be, or will they all be imposed? I would hope our trading partners will react and respond and be willing to play fair with us. If that's the case, we won't need these tariffs.
I do want to move to another one of the president's main priorities, that is border security. He wants to move forward with mass deportations of illegal immigrants, but we know some of those undocumented immigrants play a critical role on farms. Are farmers right to be worried about losing some of their valuable workers?
Again, I think we should always be cautious and aware of what's going on everywhere. The president made border security, the integrity of our international border, our sovereignty, one of his highest issues in all three of his presidential campaigns. How this will be implemented, we shall see. But yes, my home congressional district, which is the northwest half of the great state of Oklahoma, possesses a lot of livestock feeding programs, a lot of livestock marketing programs, meat processing facilities. I'm very sensitive about these issues, but the president's made it clear we're going to abide by the law. And I would tell you this also means we need to make changes in the laws that pertain to workers that come into this country and people who are here. But our fellow citizens won't let us do that until we can convince them we've secured the border and secured the situation at home. Then we can address ag labor in the long-term sense.
We'll be back with more from Congressman Frank Lucas right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. hear from the diverse players who are trying to navigate taxes, trade, and technology as we dive into what's ahead for food and agriculture. The summit takes place on Monday, March 17th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. We asked Congressman Frank Lucas how this Trump administration will differ from the first when it comes to agriculture.
When the president was first elected in 2016, I think not only the Democrats, but maybe and it was a difficult thing to get the administration up and going because usually you spend 6 months or a year planning in advance. But in this administration, he is a cadre of veterans from the previous administration, and he and his people have spent literally 2 years, maybe some would argue 4 years, getting ready for this. So it's dramatically smoother. Think of this as a more mature Trump administration. Now, we've got a very tight margin in the House, you know, just a couple of seat majority Republicans and a couple of seat majority in the Republicans in the United States Senate. So he's moving aggressively with executive orders. He's moving aggressively to do the things he can from within the administration, but we're still going to have to legislate. And that's where a more mature Donald Trump will be very helpful to us.
And I want to follow up exactly on that point, talking about that narrow majority that you guys have in the House. It's something that's going to possibly complicate farm bill discussions as well. Are you confident that a farm bill will pass this year, given that you guys have that narrow majority in the House?
I believe we will. When we were able, even with a Democrat Senate and a Republican House and a Democrat president, to extend the 18 Farm Bill for another year and put in $10 billion in monies, I would call it emergency money, to address the problems faced in production agriculture, that was a statement that there is a will in the House and the Senate to get this work done. Rural America voted overwhelmingly for President Trump every time. So he knows that we are his people, his base. And in a narrow, narrow margin like this, there's something called budget reconciliation, where once a budget cycle, you run a bill that the net effect is to reduce spending, but it only requires a simple majority in the House, which is the way we do things, but it only requires a 51 vote margin in the Senate, whereas they have to have 60 for everything else. So don't be surprised if you have a reconciliation bill that will address the border and address the tax code early, maybe very soon, then what would be this year's regular reconciliation bill sometime later in the spring or summer, which would be a vehicle for a farm bill. But there'll also be a third reconciliation bill after October 1. So we'll have maybe not this first bite at the apple, but we'll have two more bites at the apple. And no matter how good the 18 farm bill is, and it was based on my 14 farm bill, solid with inflation and COVID and trade wars and all the other things. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We've got to turn the knobs, address the safety net, address crop insurance issues. We can get that done. So I'm a wheat farmer in Western Oklahoma. So I am always optimistic. I am always hopeful. And that's the way I describe the 2025 farm bill.
I'd like to get your thoughts on the new Democratic leadership in both ag committees. We've got Senator Amy Klobuchar and we have Congresswoman Angie Craig. How do you expect them to differ from their predecessors?
Well, I served with the previous Democratic chairman of the Senate Ag Committee when she was a House member. Very determined, old school progressive, Senator Stabenow, wonderful individual, now retired. Senator Klobuchar from Minnesota. Agriculture is a little different in Minnesota than it is from Michigan. I think that's a positive. And we now have Senator Bozeman of Arkansas as the Senate Ag Committee chairman. So I'm very optimistic there. On the House side, we had our organizational meeting this week, and Angie became the ranking Democrat, a very articulate, a generational change from her predecessor, David Scott, very energetic. Again, I think we're on a good path here because we have good leadership now in both chambers.
And one final question for you before we wrap. I'd just like your thoughts. What is your message to farmers who are still frustrated over the fact that a farm bill could not get passed last year? Those who were waiting for something and just weren't, that something wasn't able to pass the finish line.
The American voters for some time now, a decade plus, have given us very tight margins. the Democrats would be in control barely, or we Republicans would be in control barely, and not just the House, but also the Senate. And the two previous elections were kind of cliffhangers, President Trump's election being a more of a mandate event. It's just been really difficult to do things, even the important things like farm bills, but you can't give up hope. The voters decide who's on the field to play the game. We just have to work harder, those of us who are working on behalf of rural America and production agriculture.
Congressman Frank Lucas, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Look forward to our next visit.
We'll be back with our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at new members of the Senate Ag Committee in this week's Map It Out.
The Senate Agriculture Committee is welcoming four new members to the panel in the 119th Congress. Two Democrats, Alyssa Shalotkin and Adam Schiff, represent Michigan and California. Republicans Jerry Moran of Kansas and Jim Justice of West Virginia are also joining the panel. Schiff is the first California senator to serve on the committee since the 1980s. He served in the U.S. House for over 20 years before winning the Senate seat once held by the late Dianne Feinstein. During the campaign, Schiff said he would follow the lead of Feinstein and take a centrist approach to water and ag issues. Slotkin also served in the House before winning the seat held by former Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow, who retired. Slotkin hails from rural Michigan, where her grandfather founded the meat processing business High Grade Foods that created Ballpark Franks. Kansas Republican Jerry Moran is joining the Ag Committee after being a longtime industry supporter. However, his stay on the committee could be temporary. His seat could be reassigned to the senators appointed to fill the Senate seats vacated by Vice President J.D. Vance of Ohio and Secretary of State Marco Rubio of Florida. Newly elected Senator Jim Justice of West Virginia is also joining the committee. The former West Virginia governor founded Justice Farms in the late 1970s and has grown the operation to become one of the region's top grain producers. Justice has led more than 100 companies as president and CEO to become the richest person in the state. Mike Braun is the only Republican who left the committee this year. He was elected governor of Indiana. Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand of New York left Ag to join the Appropriations Committee. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar will serve as the committee's leading Democrat, and Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas is the committee's new chairman. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is focused on all of the executive orders that President Trump is signing. Joined this week by Michael Marsh with the National Council of Agricultural Employers and Jonathan Coppice with the University of Illinois. Thank you both for joining us, gentlemen. And Michael, I want to start with you first, sir. How worried are farmers that President Trump's mass deportations will sweep up ag workers?
They're very concerned, Andrew, and good morning. Actually, yesterday I spent some time visiting with some growers about exactly this issue. And on our regular weekly H2A call, we've had some concerns raised even by employers who are using H2A workers. Recently, you might have heard, probably within the past couple of weeks, there was a CBP activity taking place out in California. And unfortunately, some of the news reports indicated there that on the first day, they lost about 25% of the workers, and the next day, they lost about 75% of the workers. And they're in the middle of orange harvest out in California right now, so they're very concerned about what this might mean. Two days ago, I caught an interview with Tom Homan, the border czar, on TV, and I was a little concerned because he said, you know, if you have a worker that's maybe been in country and working for quite some time, and they're picked up at the same time that somebody else who they're really targeting are the criminals, then that individual is probably going to be deported as well. So, of course, that's very, very concerning for folks in agriculture.
And administration officials make it sound like they're only targeting migrants with criminal records. Is there a fear that other workers may also get arrested?
Yes, there is. And that was similar to that issue that I just shared with you about occurring in California. And of course, that was during the Biden administration when they were doing that. But if we have stepped up enforcement, my guess would be that at some point there are going to be more agricultural workers that are going to be swept up. And that's going to be a challenge, because once you're down a worker, it makes it very difficult to harvest your crop or get your other work done.
Jonathan, I'd like to bring you into the discussion, sir. You know, Republican congressional leaders, they're making plans for legislation that could slash federal spending while extending tax cuts that expire this year. How could agriculture be affected by that?
Good morning, Andrew. It's a good question. I don't know that we can have a definitive answer yet, but certainly we're starting to see some of the indications. I think probably the primary issue is they're going to use this reconciliation process, most likely, which is budget focused and kind of limits a whole lot of policy work, but really is focused on slashing, cutting, or offsetting tax cuts, as you mentioned. In which case, as we know, the Farm Bill, which got extended another year by the last Congress, is sitting out there at roughly a 10-year cost of about $1.3 trillion over 10 years. And so that obviously makes it a potential item to be on that offset list. And I think what we've already seen some news reports around the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or the Food Assistance Program as one of those areas that I believe there was a report of about $300 billion in reductions to that spending. And so any of that can get caught up in a budget-focused, budget reconciliation effort.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. See what could be at risk.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to navigate taxes, trade, and technology as we dive into what's ahead for food and agriculture. The summit takes place on Monday, March 17th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. The House Budget Committee has floated proposals to make deep cuts in nutrition assistance to help pay for tax cuts and other GOP priorities. We asked Jonathan Coppas if that will impact the chances of getting a new farm bill.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really unlikely that Congress can go through budget reconciliation and then turn around and write a farm bill in 2025. So I think it's if the farm bill and the farm programs, crop insurance, conservation, SNAP, if all of that doesn't get taken up by reconciliation, I think we're looking at another extension, because the amount of time on the legislative calendar, the amount of legislative oxygen, if you will, that will be needed to do budget reconciliation makes it very difficult for a regular order process. If they only take cuts in SNAP, you know, now we're back to this situation in which that kind of long-running 50-year coalition between farm interests and food assistance interests has been broken. And then I don't know how a farm bill gets done, trying to count votes and tight margins, tight vote counts in Congress. It gets really tough to see that path.
Yeah, and I would like to ask you one more question on the farm bill. Another hurdle that Republicans have to deal with is the fact that they have such a narrow majority in the House. So how do you think that narrow majority is going to play into the farm bill discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of fallback, if you will, is what we've been seeing in the last couple of years with narrow majorities, which is extending the existing farm bill out another year or two. And I think you know, if we're taking odds on this sort of thing, I think the odds favor more extensions, just because the challenges of counting votes, and particularly if the SNAP program is consumed by reconciliation, now it gets even more difficult, because you've got to really focus on the intra-caucus squabbles and disagreements over everything from farm program payments to crop insurance and conservation. And so I think it kind of, as I said, puts the odds on extending it further, the 2018 Farm Bill further.
And Michael, I'd like to bring you back in for one final question again on ag labor. You know, farmers, they rely on that H-2A visa program to import workers, but producers say the program's too restrictive and that wages they have to pay are excessive. Can farmers expect any relief this year?
We had a conversation yesterday up on Capitol Hill with staff, and we're looking forward to perhaps some activity from the administration, maybe some congressional review acts, reviews by the Congress itself. That would perhaps affect a couple of the rules, but we've got litigation ongoing with regard to the adverse effect wage rate, the program rule that came out of the Biden administration. It was over a period of about 18 months. Users of the H-2A program had 3,000 new pages of regulations to try to deal with. It was just a crushing amount of regulation. And so hopefully we're going to continue to have some success with some of the litigation we've got to stop some of these regulations. We're very fortunate to get an injunction in the Western District of Kentucky on some litigation relative to a worker protection rule that was just pejorative in the nature and the tenor of the regulation itself. So hopefully we'll be able to continue to have some success there, but we could use some help and some support from the White House as well as from the Congress.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at the China Phase One trade deal in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Some policymakers and ag leaders are eyeing the China Phase One trade deal as an avenue to shield U.S. farmers from export losses triggered by retaliatory tariffs enacted by President Trump. However, other experts argue that without a new trade deal, enforcement options may be limited. As you can see on this chart, Beijing was behind on its ag purchases before the pandemic scrambled global trade. The legal text of the deal only required China to meet its year-end targets. However, from the beginning, China was not making purchases at the pace required to put it on course to meet those targets, according to an analysis from the Peterson Institute for International Economics. At the end of 2020, with just weeks to go before Trump left office, China had fulfilled between 64 and 82% of its annual commitment, depending on whether Chinese import data or U.S. export data are referenced. In the second year, China was still below the commitment, buying between 77 and 83% of pledged agricultural purchases. China unproportionately bought commodities based on original commitments. For example, corn purchases led the pack, reaching over 1,000% of the original commitment. Pork purchases exceeded estimates by about 300%. However, as you can see on this chart, soybeans remain well below the committed volumes. During the first Trump administration and the trade war with China, direct payments out of the Commodity Credit Corporation were made to farmers to compensate for the lost export markets. Trump has recently floated the idea of using tariff revenues as a way to pay for tax cuts, but he has not yet signaled that he would once again use the CCC funds to bail out farmers in the event of another trade war. Read more in Oliver Ward's story on our website. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Achieving excellence isn't easy. It's reserved for those willing to work for it. Farmers like you, who strive for bigger yields and better education. People who settle for nothing less than the very best, because you know excellence can only be achieved through hard work, commitment, and perseverance. Take your operation to new heights and join us for the 2025 Commodity Classic, Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot.
Thanks for joining us on this week's AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA's monthly agricultural prices report comes out Friday. and we'll be bringing you a special edition of the show next week from the American Farm Bureau Convention in San Antonio. We'll also continue to follow the latest on President Trump's cabinet appointees. Be sure to visit our website, agripulse.com, for the latest updates on ag policy and more. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.